The next topic we're going to talk about is pellet mills, the growth of pellet mills and its impact on the industry. I'm sorry to report that our speaker for this presentation unfortunately had a family emergency and couldn't join us, but Don and I sit next to each other in all of these meetings, and I just stole his notes to do this. So we've been looking into this issue for some time now, and the question, I'm reminded of a situation where there were a couple of sharks crossing the Atlantic, father and a son. And as they cross, the son says, "Dad, I'm kind of hungry." And he says, "Well, there's a boat over there, and I'm sure there's some food on it. Let me go knock the boat down. All the food will jump in the water, and then we'll go over there. But I don't want you rushing in. Don't be too quick. What we're going to do is we're going to circle three times with one-third of our fin out of the water. And then we're going to circle three times after that with half your fin out of the water. And then we're going to circle three times with all the fin out of the water. And then you go eat." He says, "Why?" I said, "I'll tell you later." And he goes and knocks the boat down, and all the people jump in the water, and they circle once, and they circle twice, and they circle three times, and then they go in and eat. And as they're swimming off, the son said, "That was very good, but why did we circle all those times?" He said, "Son, they taste so much better when they have all that crud scared out of them." This is the first circle. Wood residue market. In 2006, we had a presentation in Savannah by James Bentley from the Forest Service, who's going to be our speaker this afternoon. And the market at that time for residuals was 11% of harvest. And of that 11% of harvest, the residual market was divided 32% among fiber products, less than 1% among coal, less 10% particle board, less than 1% saw products, 46% biofuels. That's back in 2006. And then the miscellaneous was 10%. Mulch is 60% of the 10%, which makes us 0.00717 of total harvest. 0.0717%. So move it two more decimal places to the left. Our current residuals utilization. I was at a meeting of the Composite Panel Association 2 weeks ago in New Orleans, presenting on this topic, and the speaker there from one of the forest marketing companies said that biofuels now is 62%. That leaves 38% for the rest of us. The pie is the same size, it's still 11%. But that means we're all fighting with all those other for the same amount of product. We looked at the states, the top 10 states with existing pellet mills. Pennsylvania has 11th, Wisconsin 11th, Michigan 10, Oregon, Virginia has 10, New York has 9. These are existing bioenergy, mostly pellet operations. There are 135 existing mills. They have a capacity of 10 million tons per year. That's dry tons. We looked at new pellet mill construction. Right now, you have pellet mill construction in Alabama, Arizona, Florida, Georgia, two in Louisiana, two in Mississippi, one in North Dakota. The total here, an added capacity coming online fairly soon at 3.5 million tons. Right, we're up to 13.5 million tons. Proposed pellet mill projects. Now, these change every day because projects get proposed, they can't get the funding, they go somewhere else, they recombine, etc. This is a current list that I could find. And right now, we're talking about another 6 million tons capacity coming online. So that gives us right now, in a look at the industry by category, facility, and capacity, proposed pellet mills, 21 for 5.9 million, mills under construction, 9 for 3.5 million, and existing pellet mills for 10.4 million. We're talking about 19 million, almost 20 million facilities in capacity, 20 million tons. In 2010, U.S. wood pellet demand was less than 4 million tons. That's what our market is in the U.S. This is something we did for BCAP. We say, all right, where is our demand? Just among member companies, you'll know. These concentrated areas in Texas through the East Coast and up in the West and Northwest, that's our current capacity and demand just from our members. If you look at bioenergy, the dark circles are existing facilities, the light circles are planned facilities, but they're in exactly the same places in the East Coast. So this online demand that's coming along is coming along pretty much in our markets. Where are the pellets going? A lot of this is a map that was done by the Southern Environmental Law Conference. The yellow is proposed, so these are proposed plants. The green are existing. The arrows indicate that they are exporting overseas. And basically, you have a lot of capacity here that's going out of Chesapeake to Europe. You've got things here that are going out of Wilmington, Savannah, Bismarck, Mobile, Baton Rouge, all of these facilities here and all of these facilities here are going to Europe. Why Europe? Well, they have international agreements on greenhouse gas emissions. They have a goal of 20% of their energy from bioenergy by 2020. They have the ability to subsidize biomass acquisition and pass the cost on to the European energy users and consumers. The largest importer of biomass from the U.S. in the Southeast Forest is the U.K. Biomass is ample, it's cheap. And exporting to Europe can only happen if the EU government subsidizes it. And this is a heavily subsidized export operation to meet their demand. And what they're doing is they're cutting their emissions by burning pellets with coal. And wood pellets cut coal emissions significantly. And that's how they plan to meet their 2020 emissions guidelines. But we've joined with the Wood Fiber Coalition, which consists of the home furnishings industry, the landscape and nursery industry, ourselves, the composite panel industry. And this was formed in 2009 primarily to deal with BCAP, but it represents a good composite of the residual market users in the U.S. Our issues with the pellet mills is simply that government subsidies disturb existing markets. An unsustainable market shift puts existing jobs and capital investment at risk, and a lot of states are being approached with the pellet mill story of saying, we're going to bring in new business, we're going to bring in new jobs, and we're going to use existing capacity. But what we're finding is that they're asking for taxpayer money to subsidize private industry, which we don't really approve of, and they're not really using the residuals that they claim they would use, they get to using the same pulp materials, et cetera, that we and other users use. So we're really in the process of, in a battle, potential battle of diversion, as opposed to expanding the market and getting more capacity. We took our case to the states, and recently we surveyed a lot of you in the Southeast and asked, you know, what is your employment capacity, and what is your production capacity, because we want to tell the other side of the story. There's two sides to this, because if you have limited raw material supplies and someone new comes in and you divert them, then those new jobs are, yes, they're created, but they may cost you other jobs that you hadn't considered. And in this case, North Carolina, our members alone have 139 jobs and 1.7 million cubic yards of capacity, which we calculate out to 1 million tons. We've got 211 in South Carolina, 3 million cubic yards. We've got 349 in Virginia, that's 2.6 million cubic yards. And in Georgia, we have 433 employees and 3.3 million cubic yards. So we basically represent 1,100 jobs and 10 million cubic yards. That's a lot to be put at risk. That's a lot of jobs that are already in remote communities that are, many of you are the only employers. Those are jobs that would be difficult to replace if your plant suddenly became unavailable due to lack of raw materials. We went to North Carolina and we met with the Departments of Agriculture and Forestry and Economic Development. We presented to them the other side of the argument that this is not necessarily a zero-sum transaction, that for the increase in one area, you may lose in another. And frankly, they were quite appreciative and very responsive to the fact that they've never considered that, because they had no idea who we were or how big we are, how many jobs we represent. They expressed concern about how this might affect their long-term forestry plans. You know, is it going to be a blip? Anything that's created by a subsidy can happen quickly, and it can also die quickly. If the subsidies go away, a lot of these plants will go away, because there's only 4 million tons market in the U.S. If the European subsidy can't make that transport from the U.S. to the U.K. Feasible, the lack of subsidy would simply kill most of those projects. They're concerned that the windfall to the landowner in profits would discourage or would encourage poor decisions based upon their economic plans for the state. And they need to balance the public opinion, though they recommended that we balance public opinion by making our story known in general, that there are other people involved in this transaction, and that we need to focus on state legislators, because this becomes a rather local area issue when you're talking about employment and new plant facilities, new construction. We went to Georgia. Georgia is pretty active, and it's one of the more active states in biomass. And you can see that in there, these are heat and power plant facilities, these are liquid fuel facilities, these are pellet facilities, and there's a good number of them there. When we talked to them, they said that Georgia ranks number one in pellet exports overseas, which means a lot of revenue to the state and to their economy. They get 10 Georgia mills have a capacity of 1.35 million tons a year, and the state offers no incentives, but they can't control the local tax and other incentives. When we went to North Carolina, we were talking to regulators. When we went to Georgia, we were talking to a very good politician. And he took a very different view of it. He says, frankly, Local governments don't care that it's unfair to you. Local governments don't care that subsidies might affect you if you're two counties over. What they care about is the jobs that that county is looking to gain. And you need to tell your story in that vein. You need to tell it to the local legislators and the local officials. That's a very political view, and it was eye-opening. Then we visited with, again, local issues is jobs. We've been through two circles, and before the feeding frenzy started, and we started considering what are we really going to do, because we have these two very divergent views. And in one case, we're saying we're against subsidies, we're against this, we're against unfair competition. And Georgia says, but what are you for? What can I do for you? What do you want from me?
Same subsidies.
Yes. Maybe we're focusing on the wrong question. And then we met with Georgia Forestry, and Georgia Forestry says, look here, we've got 20 million tons a year of excess capacity. You know, we've got 40,000 million, that's 4 billion cubic feet of capacity of inventory. And our problem is, we can't get to it. We would love to expand our business. So we're saying, all right, the issue here is different. The issue is we're all trying to feed off the same pie, and the pie hasn't gotten any bigger. So we're all fighting over smaller pieces. So what's holding things up? What's preventing? We don't want to divert resources. So what do we do? And here is expand production. And I've heard it twice in meetings here. You can't get to the capacity. There is plenty of capacity. When we did the forest survey for our Cypress project, we did an inventory analysis, and virtually all the states in the Southeast have huge inventories. Growth exceeds removals and mortalities by a significant amount. The most common thing we hear is, but I can't get to it. I can't get it out. It's not coming out of the forest. So we're looking at it from, if there are incentives, put the incentives where they can actually do some help. And this is something that we can support and be for. Increase forest production. Provide tax incentive for loggers. Increase BMP overview, so that they do it right. And expand the market, don't divert it. Because there's plenty of capacity out there. There's plenty of inventory out there. So the solution is really make the pie bigger, so that there's enough volume for all of us to continue to do business. We don't think the European subsidies are gonna last that long. They're extremely expensive, and there's indications in the press that the European public is pushing back on the price points that they're having to pay for this. And it's only going to get worse. And I don't know how they can justify the carbon footprint of floating pellets across the U.S., across the ocean to get to the U.K. from the U.S. and still call that environmentally. But that's not the issue for us. The issue is we need to have access and flow to raw material. So what we're asking from the members is any changes, we'd like you to report any changes in market conditions that you see in your local area. We're an expansive network, and one of the things we need is early warning when the market changes, because that gives us time to respond to analyze the situation and respond to it properly. We ask that any government subsidies that you see, you would let us know about. And we ask that any news of new pellet mills that are actually, again, the proposed pellet mill list is very long and it changes constantly because it's proposed, it's not actual. It's subject to funding, it's subject to permits, it's subject to a lot of variability. And a lot of those things get replaced with other ideas or other options. We need to monitor this process more carefully and see if we can get an expansion in capacity. I'd be very interested to hear James Bentley's presentation this afternoon on FAA data, what the latest forest inventory uses are, because how big is that pie and how much bigger can it get is a big issue. Bill?
The one main issue is the same thing in the trucking industry. The loggers are dying reef, and the kids aren't coming out. So in Florida alone, if you look at how many swamp loggers there was 5 years ago to how many are today, they can go in the swamps and get it. They're just not going to spend, you know, $2 million to put a logging crew together to make ends meet.
Well, that's why we think if you're going to subsidize the operation, subsidize it so everyone can benefit. That's the problem. That's the problem. There aren't enough loggers. Some of you have put on your own logging crews to solve the situation, but that's an expensive and difficult operation.
The question I keep asking in regards to pellets is it really cleaner air to burn pellets with coal? And the answer is, yeah, if you look at when the pellet's burning with the coal, the answer is yes. But then the question I come back with that I'm having a hard time getting the real answer to is, well, if you consider all the energy that was put into making the pellet and putting it on a ship and burning all that fuel to go across the world, and consider all of the energy consumed and combine that with the you know, what's really cleaner? Is it really cleaner to make a pellet and burn it with coal? And if the answer was to come back and say, no, it's not cleaner, then all these European subsidies and things are going to be in question. And I'm trying to get that answer, and I can't get the answer.
That's not our issue, Ralph. Our issue as the council is to maintain a fair and open and equitable marketplace.
Okay, but...
And whether or not... Whatever reason is behind it, you know, we're not going to change the UK's opinion. We're not going to change the UK's subsidies. You know, what we need to do is make sure you all have access to raw materials. That's our role. Someone else can deal with the UK and whether or not the environmental justification of what they're doing. I have to deal with what they're actually doing and what it's causing in the marketplace for y'all. That's what our concern is. Okay. I'm sorry, I let that Texas thing out there, didn't I? For all of you.
These guys.
These guys. No, I've never lived in Jersey. So, again, you know, we're aware of the issue. We're working on it. We're working with the Wood Fiber Coalition. We'll be meeting in a couple of weeks with... The forest industry production people. We think the best path right now, as Bill points out, is getting it out of a forest is a dying art. It's a dying breed. We need, if we can't get it out of the forest, then we're all fighting over the scraps. We need to be able to get it out. And that if they're going to subsidize, if the government's going to spend some money, spend it so everybody can benefit, not just one segment. Make the market bigger. We have the capacity. And if you ever get a note in the email that says, you know, please don't print this email. Paper is one of our cheapest, and our forests are one of our most valuable, naturally renewable resources. Manage it properly, you know. No, it's valuable. And print everything, so I don't have to tell you three times. Yes, sir.
You know, you were. I came in late, obviously, and I just heard the tail end of what you were saying about the UK. And I don't know if folks in here are aware of this or not, but the Communist European Union, as I refer to it, has put a lot of pressure on the UK to stop purchasing wood fiber from North American suppliers. And there's just that pressure's been mounting weekly. And the whole thing is, and one of the reasons why I've been touching a little bit on it in the newsletter is that I'm trying to bring light to the fact that now these environmentalists are changing their tune about burning wood fiber and its effect on carbon release. And so they're trying now to say, okay, well, this is bad and we need to stop doing it. And the pressures that they put on, like the EPA and the European Union, are starting to bother these groups enough that they're putting pressure on the UK to stop procuring so much wood fiber from the North American region. And that's mounting steadily. So that's a good thing. But it's funny how it kind of circles around and, you know, they bite themselves in the ass just when they first started out. Just, you know, this is the way to go, burning wood fiber, and now all of a sudden it's...
I was reading last night that the Drax plant in the UK is a terawatt plant and would require 6,600 acres of forest land to support it.
A tree stand the size of Connecticut every year.
Yeah. Just one plant.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's what we're talking about.
That's what's really driving the bad publicity for all of us. So long term, that could be beneficial to the other markets that rely on forest as the city.
Well, the big issue is if you're in the Southeast and you're in, near, or between active ports that are exporting, you're in an active competition area right now. And I have reports of, you know, upwards of 30 and 40% price increases or loss of availability from member plants. So we need to expand capacity. I'm sorry, I'm out of time. So if you have any questions, please let me know. I had another slide. I thought I did. But you can contact me at the MSC office, and I'm always happy to talk to you about this issue. And please let us know if you see any changes in the marketplace, because we need to record and track them as part of our dealings with the states. Thank you.
I know it.
Well, I don't like to answer right now.